It is Garden Talk, hour number two, live at KSRO in the KSRO greenhouse. I am joined by Gwen Kilcher. I'm Steve Garner. Dr. Stephanie Larson, Steve Swain, both from UCCE, Sonoma and Marin, and Dr. Carl Winter from UC Davis, a plant toxicologist, is joining us via telephone this morning.
We should remind everyone that UCCE stands for the University of California's Cooperative Extension. So that's what that means.
And we certainly want to address the fire retardant issue. Dr. Winter, we still have you?
Yes.
Fire retardant is on everyone's mind. A lot of the community got doused with a hefty dose of that and the safety issue involved in that. Press Democrat did a good comprehensive review of that in today's gardening section in Saturday's paper. Steve, do you want to add anything about fire retardant, what we should or shouldn't be worried about as far as replanting our gardens?
Fire retardant is generally ammonium phosphate, at least the stuff they use in the wildlands. I assume that the urban fire retardants are similar. I'm sorry, I thought somebody else. And ammonium phosphate is basically breaks down into nitrogen and phosphorus, which should be they're plant available. They're commonly found in the soils. They're nutrients. And the beautiful thing about that is that these things should allow your garden to even help your garden to a limited extent, as long as there's not too much applied. If there's been too much applied, then we start running into problems with salt buildups in the soil. And this will show up as maybe burned edges on the edges, burning on the edges of the leaves of your plant. But it will wash out. They're water soluble. So just with time, some of the plants will take this up and other parts of it will move out. And your garden should be okay with the fire retardant. Did you have anything you wanted to add, Carl?
No, I think that, you know, from that, I think that captures it pretty well there. I think it is something that does break down pretty rapidly. So as far as consumer exposure, you're looking at natural components that are already in the soil that might have been added to that as long as the concentration isn't too high.
I guess part of the concern was runoff into streams and watersheds.
Right.
And that may be a risk. But as far as the average home gardener, minimal risk is my understanding.
That's our understanding as well, yes.
Right.
And the PD does a good job about letting you know what you should and shouldn't do. Don't use high-pressure hoses to get this off. Just a light spray is good. They said if there's concentrations on standing water, it might be a good idea to fill that in because dogs, cats, pets could ingest a pretty high amount of salt, could they not?
That's what it was saying, yes, and that makes sense. As it breaks down and it becomes a salt.
So that's the retardant issue. I mean, not that we've just summed up everything to know about retardant, but it seems like it's a minimally risky issue as far as people replanting in their soil. I think more people are concerned with the long-term consequences of when are we going to get definitive information about what type of possible heavy metals have been deposited, what type of what has burned plastics and those type of things on our property, and what's the long-term effects of that. And I guess it would be prohibitive for the average homeowner to have soil analysis done and when and if they should even consider doing that. Where are we as of this third week following the fire as far as replanting? Gwen, you were talking about just using container gardens for the meantime.
I figured out those people that can move back to their homes, if they had fire damage of some sort, and they're hesitant about planting a garden, a vegetable garden in the ground, go ahead and bring in or make some planter boxes, big containers and whatnot, and you know, bring in some soil and grow above ground instead of in the ground until we do get some definitive answers as to whether the soil is safe to replant in or not. So you don't have to not have a garden. You just bring in some containers or make some. So that would help.
And if you do know what you want to have tested for, some mm-hmm. things in terms of soil testing are not that expensive to have done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I believe it's somewhere around $100 if you want per sample or something like that. And these are ballpark figures. Certainly don't quote me. There are a number of labs in both locally and statewide that you can send soil samples in and say, hey, I want to have it tested for salt content. And, you know, I had an older house and I'm worried about lead paint and that burning and leaving lead ash on my garden. And so I want to test it for lead and XYZ. And they can tell you what it'll cost ahead of time on the phone.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good suggestion. I mean, it is expensive, and it is quite limited too, I think, as to, you know, what you want to do. The important thing is to know what sort of things you want to look at. That's a real conundrum for many, many consumers. So I just wanted to get it tested. Well, are you looking for this? Are you looking for that? Are you looking for organic persistent compounds or heavy metals or nutrients or salts? And every one of those tests involves different procedures, different instrumentation, different costs associated with it. So, you know, I'm hoping that as time moves on, there will be a concerted effort to really understand much better about what may have happened in the soil. I'd imagine the University of California will be very interested in getting involved in that as well. And, you know, hopefully there'll be some good findings that come out that don't suggest that every individual consumer needs to have their soil tested, because I think that may may not be the best way to go about it. Also, in this case, you're going to have tremendous differences in what might be in certain soils based upon what has burned where. So I think it's going to be hard to say, well, this area is perfectly fine and this area has high levels of this, because it's going to be really dependent on where the fire hit the hardest, what sort of structures were burned, what other materials, you know, were there batteries that would have lead associated with them, or were there, you know, other things that just be, you know, regular wood burning and vegetation. That's going to have a big impact on what's going to show up on the soil.
So at this point, are you gathering soil samples at all, Stephanie, or just plant materials for analysis from gardeners and master gardeners?
Right now, the Citizen Science Project is just looking at plant tissue samples. But the beauty of UC Cooperative Extension is that we are the county-based extension of the University of California. And as Carl just mentioned, we're going to bring the resources of the University of California into Sonoma County to answer some of these questions. And so going forward, what we want to do is try to answer some of these questions for these homeowners that want to replant. And it might be confusing or it might be expensive. And so we can work with them and determine what kind of soil they have, what soil type, what tests they should and shouldn't apply to their soils, and how to interpret those the results. And so we're going to, you know, there's some short-term fixes, like Gwen was saying, is about the planter boxes. And then we want to work on long-term fixes as well to make sure the soil is healthy.
Is there a timeline for the research to be completed, for something to be published? And has UC published findings concerning the aftermath of fires and the toxicity, if any, in soil, Dr. Winter?
Well, I mean, this is happening very quickly, so we often don't move fast enough in research. We have put out some statements for homeowners and others interested about what we know and what we don't know, which is pretty much summarizing what we've talked about today in terms of ash issues and as well as retardants, metals, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. Clearly there is a need to do the research, and until we can really get a good handle on what's there, it's hard to make a lot of real strong recommendations about what people can be doing.
So the health risk from eating vegetables that are exposed to these are less than the hazards of breathing these, correct?
Well, right. It's certainly depending upon the materials that you're looking at. The polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, for example, those would have a much greater risk from breathing than eating. And I think, you know, an important point that I often face is, you know, we have to look at the benefits of eating fruits and vegetables. Sometimes the worst thing consumers can do, because they're concerned about the safety of their fruits and vegetables, is they eat fewer fruits and vegetables, and that may be doing them a lot more harm in the long term. You know, a diet rich in consumption of fruits and vegetables and whole grains can significantly decrease one's risk of cancer, certain types of heart disease, and, you know, we've got really great data on that. So we don't want people to be fearing their produce. There certainly are a lot of benefits to it. It doesn't appear from my understanding as a food toxicologist that there's a lot that consumers need to be worried about for, you know, general produce that's being grown in Sonoma County. But I think, you know, the other questions about replanting in your yards and, you know, that those are questions in which we do need to get a little more research to make sure that we don't have, you know, sequestration of certain metals out of the soil into plants that we're going to be consuming.
I know it's premature. We've had questions on the show already of should I remove all my soil from my gardening right. area and bring in new soil? And our response is we don't know.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I really feel for consumers. This is, you know, we're in new ground here, and it's you know, it's got to be difficult. There's enough stress on everyone's mind already to add this concerns about their own food. You know, just makes it overwhelming, I'm sure, for many people. But, you know, we also have sort of a saying, you know, in food safety, which is, you know, when in doubt, throw it out. If we're not sure about it, then maybe we need to be a little careful.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll be right back, and our conversation will continue after this.
I'm Clark Wolf. Listen to At the Table with Clark Wolf, Saturdays noon to 1, right here on KSRO.
The 2017-18 season is underway at Weill Hall at Sonoma State University's Green Music Center. Once again, this season offers a great variety of entertainment. Friday, November 10th, don't miss Les Arts Florissantes with conductor William Christie and full choir with their impassioned revival of the Baroque period. On Sunday, November 12th, witness the 3 p.m. performance of Tango Buenos Aires with their new program, The Spirit of Argentina, part of the MasterCard Performance Series. And on Friday, December 1st, it's Late Night with Leonard Bernstein. This multimedia event provides a glimpse into the personal side of this iconic figure, hosted by his daughter, Jamie. Also part of the MasterCard Performance Series. An evening at Weill Hall at Sonoma State University's Green Music Center offers an experience you'll never forget. For tickets and more info, visit gmc.sonoma.edu.
Thank you, Sonoma County, for supporting the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market during this difficult time. Our hearts go out to all those affected. We all need a little comfort now, and for our Thanksgiving feast, enjoy selections of fresh greens, mushrooms, carrots, potatoes, turnips, Brussels sprouts, and winter squash, along with seasonal pomegranates, persimmons, apples, and walnuts. Meet local ranchers offering a variety of quality meats, including beef, chicken, and pork. Choose fresh fish and crab from a variety of seafood vendors. Everything you need to create the freshest Thanksgiving feast is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Remember to check out the creations of the many talented artisans for holiday gift giving. Open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1, at the Santa Rosa Alliance Church, Highway 12 and Fulton Road. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun. The market will return to the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts November 8th.
Listen each Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to noon for Garden Talk and the Good Food Hour, brought to you by the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Garden Talk is hosted by Steve Garner and Gwen Kilcher, who welcome your gardening questions each week. And Good Food Hour is hosted by Chef John Ash and Steve Garner, with delicious insight into cooking, eating, and enjoying good food. It's Garden Talk and the Good Food Hour, Saturday mornings on News Talk 1350 and the new FM 103.5 KSRO.
The best deals in Sonoma County are just a click away on mysonomadeals.com. From dining to entertainment to health and beauty, right now, buy a $50 gift certificate to Smooth Body Boutique in Santa Rosa for only $25. At Smooth Body Boutique, they pride themselves in making sure their clients feel soothed, sexy, beautiful, and above all else, smooth. This offer is only available for a limited time and only on mysonomadeals.com. That's mysonomadeals.com.
You're listening to Garden Talk live from Santa Rosa. on KSRO News Talk Radio, a conversation concerning what we should and shouldn't be concerned about following the fallout of the fire as far as our plants go, as far as harvesting plants that are already ready to be picked and consumed versus the and also the long-term effects of soil. When should we replant? What should we be concerned about? What we've determined this morning is the effects of the fire retardant, according to FDA and EPA, appear to be safe. You can just rinse that off, and there's no long-term effects of the fire retardant being absorbed into plant material or soil. Is that fairly accurate?
That's accurate, Steve, yes.
Okay. As far as ash fallout, from what Dr. Winter was saying, ash on the surface of plant material can be easily washed off with a light spray. Am I correct on that?
That's absolutely correct. That's right.
Okay. And Gwen, you had a question from one of our growers who unfortunately lost his farm.
Mm-hmm. And Steve, you probably could answer this question. We talk about adding a lot of organic matter into our soil, and all the microorganisms in there will help break down things and, you know, add goodies to the soil and whatnot. And I know that some microorganisms will help break down bad things in the soil. Say someone accidentally spills oil or, you know, something in their soil. Well, certain microorganisms will get out there and attack it and break it down and get rid of it. So would that be beneficial for people to add a lot of organic matter to the soil to help break down or get rid of any toxic materials that could be in their soil?
That might be, depending upon what the toxic material is, unfortunately. So certain things like lead, it's an element and it can't be broken down at all. So when you have lead or arsenic in your soil, that's going to stay there and you're going to have to find there are other ways we might be able to go about addressing it. But organic matter, adding organic matter is really good for breaking down, taking care of some of those things that can be broken down. And I think polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons would be a good example of this, is that those things generally can be broken down by microbes. And so adding organic matter can help fuel the breakdown process. But there is such a thing as too much of a good thing. A typical gardening soil can maintain a stable amount of organic matter around 5 to 8%. And if you really overdo that and you add a lot of organic matter to the soil, you end up causing some instability in the system. And what that shows up as is, you know, you get these little critters in the soil that most people hardly ever see, but you'll see them maybe if you've got good eyes, springtails. When we dig up a thing, you see all those little tiny white things jumping all around. Those are springtails. They're breaking down organic matter. And then there's things that eat springtails called symphylans, and they also eat organic matter sometimes itself. And when you add a lot of compost, then these populations of these things boom. And as the compost breaks down and you start planting into your soils, those fresh starts that you've just put in, if there's not enough organic matter to feed all those little guys in the soil, they'll start going after your starts. So you can actually cause problems to your garden by adding too much organic matter. So, you know, a little bit, I guess, but it sort of goes back to that old adage of any wisdom taken too far becomes foolishness.
Mm-hmm. You know? Very well said. Perfect. Thank you.
Anything to add to that, Dr. Winter?
No, I think Steve captured that quite well. It really depends on what materials. You can't just say, well, organic material will break down all of these things that showed up on the crops, because it really depends on what is there. And, you know, some are fairly resistant to microbial degradation. Some might be broken down pretty quickly. And as Steve mentioned, lead and other metals are elements, and so you're not going to have any breakdown of those.
Well, being as we are with how we respond to many things in life, we all feel we need to do something right away. We can't sit around and just wait for nature to take its course. As soon as the removal of the toxic debris is completed, and of course FEMA has been here, everybody has been here working on properties, homeowners come back and go, well, I'm going to start the rebuilding process, and I need to do something with all my lost landscaping. I need to get land. We've had questions about who would we recommend for landscapers to come in and start assessing what plants need to be replanted, whether my soil needs to be removed. You know, it's hard for all of us to wait for any type of definitive scientific report coming out. So when's that going to come out, Doctor? So you understand, this is from so many listeners and emails saying, when are we going to know?
No, and you've really made a strong point. People, you know, feel very, very desperate and want to be doing things, and that's human nature. You know, we at the university want to be as responsive as we can to that, but we also know that it's important to make sure that we have it right before we tell people what we think our advice would be to them as well. So it's a give or take. Certainly, there's pressure on the university to try to come up with its expert opinions. But at the same time, you know, this is a really complex issue, and it's going to take us a while.
So the opinions will be driven by analysis of the soil samples and the plants. Is that correct, Stephanie and Dr. Winter? I mean, that's where the research is going to come from analysis, from lab analysis.
Yes, that initially the lab analysis we'll be working on, and then we'll work with UC and try to make some recommendations from those.
And are you doing the plant pathology, the lab analysis here in Sonoma County? Are those being sent out to other labs? Are they being sent to UC to do the analysis?
Well, like Stephen said, there's a variety of labs, and they're very expensive, and so we're working out those details. But we thought we'd go ahead and collect the samples and freeze them while we have the samples to collect.
So the samples are being frozen here in Sonoma County at this point?
That's correct.
Okay. And how do you know when you have enough? Where's the cutoff of, like, we need this amount of samples of soft tissue, of root vegetables, of different clay soils from different parts of the county? Who decides when is enough?
I think Dr. Winter decides that.
Well, I think those are really good questions about you know, what the scope is going to be of the monitoring, how much data we have. You know, lots of experts here at the university in land, air, and water resources, as well as in plant sciences. So it's important that, you know, that we get a lot of input from people as to what is really going to be important to look at. But I can't, at this stage, give you specifics about, well, we're going to take so many samples of this and so many samples of that. You know, it all has to be worked out. We need to make sure we have the budget that will cover that, and we need to, you know, want to make sure that we're responsive at the same time, that we, you know, have enough time to really understand what we're doing, so we don't, you know, get a little bit out ahead of ourselves.
Okay. Are there other research results that are available from other universities across the country over the last 50, 60 years of wildfire damage and homeowner damage that you rely on for generalizations? Or is this California wildfire here in Sonoma County so unique as far as our soil and our climate that you can't draw any, you don't have a baseline to start with, like saying, well, we've looked at all the research from different universities over the last 25 years, and we know all this is going to happen following a wildfire. Or you have to start from ground zero, pretty much.
Well, I think it's important that we learn as much as we can about what other people's experiences have been. But you raise a very interesting point about the uniqueness of this situation. I mean, the massive fires in an urban center you know, with various types of things that you might not have to worry about for a traditional wildfire, there's additional consequences there. And certainly soil and climate issues can be quite different as well. So, you know, I think we can get some information from other studies that people have done, but I think a lot of it's going to have to be, you know, designed to deal with the local environment.
Okay. We're at the half-hour point. We'll take a short break for news, and we'll be right back. We have a few minutes more to spend with Dr. Carl Winter, Stephanie Larson, Steve Swain are here from the UCCE. Gwen Kilcher's here. I'm Steve Garner. And certainly, if you have an email question, please send it to us now, steve@ksro.com. If you have a specific area that you're concerned about, if you've lost your home in a fire, if you've lost a lot of landscaping, particular plant questions that you have, this may relate to replanting those particular plants, soil questions, be as specific as you can, and we'll have our panel today tackle that. If you want to talk, 636-1350. This is KSRO.
FM News Talk Radio, North County 103.5, South County 94.5, KSRO.
Oakmont Golf Club wants to express just how heavy their hearts are for those impacted by the wildfires and their extreme gratitude for the incredible first responders. They are the reason that the Oakmont community was virtually untouched and the golf club was unscathed. Oakmont wants to let everyone know that they are fully open and the course looks great. Oakmont is offering a Black Friday special on November 24th. No initiation fees, free year range plan, zero golf dues for the first 3 months, and over $1,700 in savings with a two-year commitment. Golf when you want it, priority tee times, and an amazing Black Friday special. Sonoma County's favorite 36-hole golf club. Go to oakmontgc.com or tell your smartphone to
call Oakmont Golf Club in Santa Rosa.
The perfect wine country wedding destination, Oakmont Golf Club. Go to oakmontgc.com.
Hi, I'm Carol. As owner of the Gift Horse Home Store, I've assembled an amazing collection of holiday items to create a unique and wonderful season of home decor. The Gift Horse is like refined farmhouse, industrial meets modern country store. We offer the brands you've come to respect, like KitchenAid, Lodge, and La Crusade. The Gift Horse also carries beautiful tabletop, bed, and table linens.
The Gift Horse Home Store, home decor and more.
Oh, that's Bogey, our meter greeter. He's quite friendly and may ask you to toss his ball. If your home is missing that certain something, come to the Gift Horse and you just might find that perfect home accent. I invite you to see the latest trends in style and decor.
From our door to your door.
We're next to Garrett Ace Hardware in Hillsburg.
The Gift Horse Home Store.
The Gift Horse Home Store.
Home decor and more.
Open every day 9 to 6.
Ulta Beauty's Gorgeous Hair event is every girl's way to good hair days. What's your idea of a good hair day?
Having an I want to run into everyone I know hair day.
When it's a must post a pic of my hair day.
I'm making plans just because my hair looks great day.
Now is the time to get daily beauty steals of up to 50% off brands like Redken, Living Proof, and Diva Curl. With over 60 hair care brands to explore, it's easy to get gorgeous hair you'll want to show off every day. Hurry, the Gorgeous Hair event ends June 3rd. Ulta Beauty, all things beauty all in one place.
Now through November 7th, it's the 20% off wine sale at your grocery outlet on 4th Street in Santa Rosa. With grocery outlets already reduced wine prices, you'll save up to 70% off during the wine sale. Get to grocery outlet on 4th Street and stock up on wine for the holidays.
Trump leaving for Tokyo. It's the first stop on a 13-day trip to Asia.
Throughout the trip, Mr. Trump is expected to discuss economic policy and play a bit of golf, and he faces international criticism for meeting with President Duterte of the Philippines, who is accused of killing thousands in his war against drugs. But the most critical issue facing the president is continued tensions with North Korea. Back in August, U.S. intelligence confirmed that North Korea had successfully miniaturized nuclear warheads, representing a potentially serious increase to its military capabilities.
ABC's Lana Zak at the White House. Vice President Trump will talk about the tax reform bill after he tours a commercial fastener plant in York, Pennsylvania. Security bumped up for tomorrow's New York City Marathon, the race just days after a deadly terror attack in Manhattan. Most of the nation will return to standard time early tomorrow, so it's a good idea to set your clocks back an hour before you go to bed tonight. It's also a good time to change the batteries in your smoke and CO detectors, too. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Sonoma County's most accurate, dependable forecast with KSRO's Daniel Trucios.
Mostly dry for the weekend with perhaps a little drizzle here or there. Partly cloudy today at 57, 55 on the coast. Clear tonight, low 34, 40 on the shores. Sunday, mostly sunny at 57, 56 in Bodega Bay. Monday, blue skies at 59, 56 on the coastline. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
Should have just left the microphones on during the break because you should have heard this discussion. There's so many other questions that have been raised just by our discussion here about the aftermath of what's going to happen with our soil and our plants and our rebuilding efforts being, well, as we move forward, and it's going to be a whole new ballgame as far as what we re-landscape with. We certainly know that for sure. Gwen Kilcher, I'm Steve Garner. Steve Swain and Dr. Stephanie Larson and Dr. Carl Winter all joining us from UCCE to discuss aftermath about replanting. Gwen, you had an interesting question about someone from the world of pathology and the chemical aftermath of the burn, that with fire temperatures exceeding 1,200 degrees, how much, quote, toxins were destroyed in the fire. And Steve, you had a response also that possibly plastics were, maybe that's gone, the plastics, but things like arsenic and lead, those things are going to remain. Fire temperature is not going to remove those from soil. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
And Dr. Winter, just chime in anytime you want, because this question came up about fire as the great cleanser. We think of fire as a starting point, as a and how important is fire in cleansing the landscape?
Well, I think it's, you know, there's sort of a double-edged sword. I think it can eliminate things, particularly when you're getting at these very, very high temperatures that you wouldn't normally see. At the same time, it has the potential to make its own nasty chemicals. You know, we've got, you know, examples of the dioxins that are being formed, which are formed when you have a bunch of plastics and organic type materials that have a lot of chlorine in them. And at high temperatures, when they're put in place together, then they can form dioxins, which are very persistent in the environment, don't degrade very quickly, certainly are not very amenable to the microbiological decay that we talked about a little bit earlier in the show. So, you know, it has a lot to do with what is the temperature. Maybe if you get a high enough temperature, then you're basically just, you know, completely incinerating something, but at certain temperatures, and I can't tell you, you know, specifics here, but at certain temperatures, you might run the risk of producing higher levels of undesirable compounds. So it's a, you know, it is a bit of a double-edged sword.
We were looking at our temperatures that preceded the fire when we had a couple days of 107 to 114 degrees, and Gwen, you were mentioning how many trees you saw that had been scorched in and around the community.
Well, just on Mark West Springs Road, I remember driving down after it was 113 degrees and looking at all the trees that had been scorched from the asphalt road that was close to them, and they just basically cooked. And then here you go, you know, with this fire. Not that they would have, you know, have been less affected, but you think of what just happened to those trees at 113 degrees, and it's just, yeah, pretty interesting to see how hot the temperatures get, how it affects plants, whether they're watered well or not, or whether they're native or not, you know, reflective heat and just excessive heat in general, what it does to plants.
You mentioned, Stephanie, about rethinking our landscape from this way forward. Some general thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Again, bringing resources from the University of California, we've brought some fire science folks down here to look at some of the areas that have been burned. And just thinking about, you know, we always talk about defensible space. And that's, we might want to increase that around certain homes, but we also want to rethink what plant materials we're planting. Things like the mulches and certain plants were just too close to homes and helped with the fire. Now, in this situation, probably there wasn't enough defensible space around the whole county. But before people start hiring landscaping, you know, we really want to put together some information through the University of California Cooperative Extension, through our master gardeners, and just really do a lot of educational outreach on helping people to address how to better fireproof, fire safe your landscaping.
That means maybe less mulch. You had mentioned specifically gorilla hair, which is that shredded bark, which burns very quickly.
And it burned very quickly. There's a lot of evidence. We were up around Fountain Grove, and some beautifully landscaped homes burned most of the landscape around there.
And some of these drought-tolerant plants, too, and even grasses. The grasses that go dormant in the winter, here you have these big, giant candles waiting to be burned. So, you know, I'm even thinking of, you know, when I have to help someone with a question about landscaping is, you know, thinking twice about drought tolerant plants. Maybe we need to give plants a little bit, plants that need a little bit more water, or maybe broader leafed foliage plants. I'm going to listen in and get some information from the fire safe planting material that's going to be coming out, thinking twice about what we should plant and what we shouldn't be planting.
You know, I want to just sort of throw in that while, you know, planting material does make a difference in some instances. For instance, you don't really want to have a bamboo or an untended bamboo hedge running from your driveway up to your underneath the eaves of your house. And similarly, there are some plants like juniper and knobcone pine, things like that, or that, you know, if you had a hedge of juniper running that same place, that juniper burns really, really well. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's really about maintenance more than it is about plant species selection, because all plants burn. Mm-hmm. They are all standing fuel to a certain degree. So, you know, worrying about whether, you know, it's this species or that species is a lot, when you look in the grand scheme of things, it's a lot less important than worrying about whether you've actually taken the time to clean out all the little dead twigs on the inside of the tree.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good observation. I'm wondering, of course, with homeowners associations and aesthetics involved, and there's some homeowners that are the associations that are very strict about the percentage of bark versus gravel, and they will actually come in and fine or assess you or say you need to remove all this. These stones and pebbles around your house because it exceeds our landscaping protocol, and we need you to put bark there. I'm wondering whether homeowners associations are going to be changing their protocols as far as landscaping.
I hope we all start looking at this issue and addressing it differently. We're going to continue to build homes in the wildland-urban interface, and with that, we have to start rethinking how we address issues such as fire fuel loads and how we're going to manage the vegetation around our homes and around our subdivisions and in our forest and rangeland areas.
I have a question here from Randy in Casadero, and she writes that trees closing their stomata during high heat events. Do other plants have this ability? Does that make sense?
I would think all plants would do that, but when they're hit with fire.
Trees close their stomata. Well, in some instances, they actually open their stomata. If they have access to water, a fair amount of water, they're going to open their stomata and cause water flow to, especially toward those lower branches. So everybody thinks of trees as very passive systems, but trees are fairly active in their response to all kinds of things, insects and drought and fire. So I'm not disagreeing with what the caller said. Mm-hmm. There are many instances where trees will close their stomata in certain circumstances, but it's not always that simple. They reroute water within them to try and keep branches that are under threat from burning quite as easily. Now, I would assume, like you guys do, that that's all, but I'm a tree guy. I'm sorry. I don't know whether spinach reroutes water to compensate for heat.
Yeah. Well, that was well said. So there's your answer to your question, Randy, from Casadero. We'll come back. A few more minutes left in the show. Dr. Carl Winter's with us, Dr. Stephanie Larson, Steve Swain, and Gwen Kilcher and Steve Garner hosting the special edition of Garden Talk after the fire. The most difficult part of this is being patient. We'll be right back.
Traffic on the fives and weather six times an hour, mornings on FM News Talk Radio, KSRO.
Thank you, Sonoma County, for supporting the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market during this difficult time. Our hearts go out to all those affected. We all need a little comfort now, and for our Thanksgiving feast, enjoy selections of fresh greens, mushrooms, carrots, potatoes, turnips, Brussels sprouts, and winter squash, along with seasonal pomegranates, persimmons, apples, and walnuts. Meet local ranchers offering a variety of quality meats, including beef, chicken, and pork. Choose fresh fish and crab from a variety of seafood vendors.
Everything you need to create the freshest Thanksgiving feast is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Remember to check out the creations of the many talented artisans for holiday gift giving. Open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1, at the Santa Rosa Alliance Church, Highway 12 and Fulton Road. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun. The market will return to the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts November 8th.
Recently, our community has been through a lot, with many of our neighbors losing everything during these devastating fires. Friedman's Home Improvement has an opportunity to help our neighbors who need tools to get back to work with the best deals of the year. And to help those affected by these fires, 5% of all event proceeds from the week-long Pro Tool event will be donated to the North Bay Fire Relief Fund. Friedman's Pro Tool events are happening from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. in Ukiah on Wednesday, November 1st, in Sonoma on Thursday, November 2nd, in Santa Rosa on Friday, November 3rd, and in Petaluma on Saturday, November 4th. Again, Friedman's Pro Tool events are happening from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. in Ukiah on Wednesday, November 1st, in Sonoma on Thursday, November 2nd, in Santa Rosa on Friday, November 3rd, and in Petaluma on Saturday, November 4th. Join Friedman's and help give back to our community. We're in this together. Sales price valid Monday, October 30th through Sunday, November 5th.
Attention, Northern California wine country wildfire victims. If you or your family have suffered injury or death, damage to your property or to a commercial business as a result of the fires, you may have a claim for damages from PG&E. For information, call our special legal helpline now at 800-722-FIRE. That's 800-722-FIRE. Call now. The state's Public Utilities Commission has launched an investigation into whether PG&E's maintenance of its equipment in Sonoma and Napa County may have played a role in these deadly fires, including whether it adequately cut back trees from power lines to reduce the known risk of fire. Reports show that PG&E has a long history of being found responsible for major wildfires because of inadequate maintenance of its power lines. How do you protect your rights and fight for the compensation you deserve? You choose the right legal team that has the experience, support staff, and resources to get you the most compensation for your damages. Call our special legal helpline now at 800-722-FIRE. That's 800-722-FIRE for a free case review.
We hope that you've learned a lot during this last hour and a half. I certainly have, and have a better sense of where we're going as far as learning about what plant materials are ingesting after the aftermath of the fire and the long-term consequences of possible chemical buildups in our soil. Steve, you said some really good things about not vilifying mulch. Would you repeat that for our listeners?
Oh, yeah. You know, I get that gorilla hair mulch, you know, it is quite flammable and it can conduct fire, but I don't want to see all mulch vilified. I mean, because mulch is what feeds our soils, and as gardeners, we want it and we kind of need it in our landscapes. It's one of the best ways to build organic matter and do all kinds of great things for the health of our soils. So, you know, a coarse bark mulch in a decorative landscape is going to be, because it's made of big chunks and bark doesn't burn very well, and big chunks aren't like kindling. It takes a lot to ignite them. So yeah, it's still technically flammable, but it's not nearly as flammable as some of these other fine mulches are. So I just would like to make sure that everybody doesn't think that, you know, after hearing us or other people out on the landscape thing talk about mulch and how, you know, it's flammable, that doesn't always mean it doesn't belong. It just means be careful where you use it and be careful what you use.
And you pointed out that rocks and gravel don't feed the soil, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, they do, but so slowly that it almost isn't worth, you know, unless your garden will be fine with a rock mulch over the next million years.
So, so be careful when we start seeing fire-resistant plantings, full pages. You can't plant these plants. These are the plants you need to plant. Plants that won't burn. As you pointed out, Steve, it would give people a false sense of security.
Right. Because, again, you know, you can put all these quote-unquote fire-resistant plants in your landscape, and if you're not pruning out the fine fuels in them and you're not keeping clearance between them and you're not tending them, it doesn't do you much good. It's funny because you can see coast live oak on both fire-resistant plant lists and fire-prone plant lists, and it's like, well, wait a minute, which is it? Anyway.
Mm-hmm. So being that I use composted horse manure as my mulch, that's pretty fire safe.
That
right?
should be really fire safe. Anything that's composted is going to pretty much be fire safe.
And it looks good. So people who don't want to use bark mulches and you want to feed your soil any kind of organic matter, you can put on top of the ground as mulch and...
not any kind. I mean, if you are putting
Animal manure.
Yeah, like animal kind of manure. Yeah, for sure. But, if it's a finely shredded mulch, you know, rice hulls can burn if they're dry. There's a lot of things out there that are, you know, vegetable derived that will burn. Mm-hmm. So just think about it.
So the timeline is gathering the research to see what toxic materials may remain in our soil, right, Stephanie? That's
gonna correct.
Be, what plant materials might be harboring toxic fallout from the fires? That's another point, right?
Right.
And once we've collated, gathered, interpreted all this information, then way down the road, once everything is cleared out of our soils, once all the insurance claims have been made and rebuilding and plans, houses rebuilt, then we start looking at re-landscaping. So this conversation is going to be going on for years.
For years, yes, it will be.
So we're a little premature about talking about what plants should or shouldn't be replanted yet, right? But because there's so much interest and so many questions being directed to the show, that's why we thought, let's at least start the conversation today.
Well, exactly. And we were getting calls about our, you know, in the initial we talked about the produce and it's if it was safe to eat or not. And again, we want to emphasize that, yes, the produce from Sonoma County is safe to eat, follow some of the rules that Dr. Winter talked about as far as washing them off and just making sure that asking yourself, where did the produce come from? How close was it to some of the burning areas? But in general, I just really want to promote, you know, people continuing to eat the local produce. As Dr. Winter said, it's better to eat that produce than to not eat your fruits and vegetables. So this coming from a livestock advisor, please eat more fruits and vegetables. just really want to push and the support of our local agriculture industries.
And Dr. Winter, I don't mean to have excluded you from a conversation. We know you're part of this. Any comments about what you've just heard over the last several minutes?
Well, I've enjoyed this discussion as well. I've learned a lot of things from my colleagues. It's always fun to run into my UCCE colleagues in various places. The university is trying to be as responsive as we can, and I think we need to be patient. I know homeowners who've been affected, people in the area, everybody is suffering, and it's hard to tell people, let's be patient when people want to move forward and want to take steps. But certainly this is a very large-scale challenge that we're facing now, and for the university to come up with best information and advice about how, you know, things should move forward, it will take a little bit of time. And of course, we're not the only game in town. There are also people, you know, in the counties, at the state and local levels that are also involved in this as well. So hopefully we can all work together, share resources, and come up with some good long-term strategies to deal with this horrible disaster.
We had a question off air. Who are the agencies to plug into as far as the re-landscaping process for information? Is there one clearinghouse? Is UC the best place to access your website on this?
You're asking the director of the UC?
Yes.
Absolutely. University of California Cooperative Extension in Sonoma County. And again, do a shout out to our Master Gardener Coordinator, Mimi Enright. So to call our office, I think, would be a really good place to start. We're a resource. So we're not selling anything except good science for our consumers.
Okay. And what about leaf blowers? Is it safe to use those again? That was quite a discussion about how people were out blowing things a day or two after moving back after the fires were extinguished and how that stirred up ash and all kinds of debris.
I would agree that it was probably premature to use the leaf blowers. And now that we've got a little bit of rain and things are settling, if they really need to go use those leaf blowers, might be okay now. But again, let nature take its course.
Okay. Is rain going to dilute the concentrates, the sample soils, to any degree, or not really with this small amount of rain? Is that going to be helpful or harmful, the rain?
I would say it's very helpful, and it's a very gentle rain, and so that's really key. So that's going to infiltrate into the soil instead of running off. And so I think it's going to be a really good thing.
It's going to promote root growth on a lot of the shrubs and trees that have been top killed by the burns, but their root systems are still alive. Oh. This is going to allow them to start sprouting. And if they can sprout and they can get enough leaves above ground, then those root systems can survive. And if they survive, then that means that they'll help hold your soils on the slopes above your houses in place. And that will help keep the landslides from occurring. So we really, really want this rain, just because it's going to help, it's a gentle rain early in the season is going to help anchor our slopes a little bit better.
Okay, well said. Dr. Carl Winter, thank you so much for this last hour and 15 minutes of joining us today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, and again, my heart really goes out to everyone that's been affected by this, and I hope that the University of California, along with many other sources, can provide some good information that will help everyone down the road.
Thank you, Dr. Winter.
Thanks again for your participation. Dr. Stephanie Larson, nice seeing you again. Thank you for coming in this morning.
And
you're anchored here in Sonoma County out on Aviation Boulevard.
Absolutely, on Aviation Boulevard. We're a partnership with the County of Sonoma, and we're happy to provide the resources from the University of California.
And Steve Swain, it was wonderful meeting you. Thanks for your input. It was really valuable today.
It's been my pleasure being here.
Gwen, thank you very much for your input today.
Thank you. Okay. This was amazing.
We'll take a break. We'll go into news and then the Good Food Hour following at 11 o'clock. I'm Steve Garner. This is KSRO and Garden Talk.